This is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. This is an audio of the issue Bloom's Taxonomies, the Devil's Education System. He is Antichrist that denieth the Father and the Son. 1 John 2:22. If you ask any teacher if they have ever heard of Bloom's Taxonomies, they will more than likely smile and say yes. It is their Bible. No one can teach without using it in their classroom. Many teachers know there is something wrong with them, but they do not know what it is. What is wrong with Bloom's Taxonomies? It is the Father and His authority. That is, the Father and His authority are missing. As I was explaining Bloom's Taxonomies to a kindergarten teacher who was using it in her classroom, she responded, "You make me feel wicked. You make me feel like I'm doing something wicked," walking away, refusing to talk to me anymore. Explaining Bloom's Taxonomies to her, using quotations from it, she, basing her life upon stimulus response, responded correctly. What she was doing was wicked. Anyone coming between the Father and His children, liberating them from Him and His authority, turning them against Him and His authority in the process, by treating them as though they were their own children, free to think and act according to their carnal desires, that is, according to their own lusts, as, by the way, the master facilitator of change did with two children in a garden in Eden, turned them against the Father's authority, is wicked. While the earthly father can be wrong, the children, knowing he is wrong, maintain the right-wrong way of thinking in their thoughts, directly affecting their actions, that is, maintaining the father's authority system in society. When you justify the child's lusts, that is, their disobeying or disregarding the father's established commands, rules, facts, and truth, as the facilitator of change using Bloom's Taxonomies in the classroom does, and the master facilitator of change in the garden in Eden did, you negate the father's authority in their thoughts, directly affecting their actions. Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things. And I add thinking pleasure, that is, lust is a standard for good instead of doing the Father's will, which our carnal heart does. It accepts pleasure as a purpose of life, not doing the Father's will. The Father's will is not there. And desperately wicked, hating anyone, I add, preventing, inhibiting, or blocking it from enjoying the carnal pleasure of the moment it lusts after. It's desperately wicked because if it senses somebody's going to take its pleasure away, it will do whatever it can to maintain access to that pleasure. The unregenerate carnal heart cannot see its hatred toward the Father's authority as being evil. That is wicked. That is desperately wicked because its lust for pleasure is standing in the way, justifying the hate. Mark 7:21 through 23. Luke 16:15, and he said unto them, "Ye are they which justify yourself before men, but God knows your hearts, for that which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God." Rejecting the Father's authority system, giving lip service to it at the most, those who use Bloom's Taxonomies as their curriculum have made all who come under their influence subject to their carnal desires of the moment, that the world, that the current situation, and or object, people, or person is stimulating, turning them against the Father and His authority. This is the same praxis which was carried out by the master facilitator of change, the master psychotherapist, in the Garden in Eden. That's Genesis 3:1 through 6. Liberating two children from the Father's authority. Those are in quotes, children of Father. Negating the Father's authority system, which is found in Hebrews 12:5 through 11, in their thoughts, so they could sin. That is, decide for themselves what is right and what is wrong behavior. That's all the woman did and Adam did. They just decided for themselves what was right and what was wrong behavior, according to their lusts and resentments of the moment, without having a guilty conscience. And that, by the way, is explained by the Apostle Paul in Romans 7, 14 through 25, negating their need of a Savior. In David Crathwell, Benjamin Bloom, Taxonomy of Educational Objectives, Book 2, Effective Domain, which is still referred to as Bloom's Taxonomies. Bloom's taxonomies, by which all educators are certified and schools accredited today, are a psychological classification system used to develop attitudes and values which are not shaped by the parents. The student must feel free to say he disliked, fill in the blank, and not have to worry about being punished for his reaction. There are many stories of the conflict and tension that these new practices are producing between parents and children. Benjamin Bloom et al. Wrote in his second taxonomy, Book 2, Effective Domain, quote, the effective domain. Now, what's that? That's how you feel when it comes to right and wrong behavior, directly affecting what you think and how you behave. Again, the effective domain is, in retrospect, a virtual Pandora's box. Now, what's Pandora's box? It's a box, or originally a jar, full of evils, which once opened cannot be closed. Once parental authority, that is the father's authority, that is the fear of judgment, or the lid, is removed, it is difficult, if not impossible, to put it back on again. It is in this box, Bloom writes, that the most influential controls are to be found. In fact, a large part of what we call, quote, good teaching, unquote, is the teacher's ability to attain effective objectives. What's that? That's liberating the students' feelings from their parents' authority. That is liberating the students from the father's authority system so they can sin, that is lust, without having a guilty conscience. Backing up, in fact, a large part of what we call good teaching is the teacher's ability to attain effective objectives through challenging the students' fixed beliefs. Now, who gave educators the right to do that? Pressuring the students, I write, out of fear of the group's rejection of them, to publicly, that is in the group, for the sake of group approval, question, challenge, disregard, defy, attack, etc., their parents' commands, rules, facts, and truth. And Bloom continues, and getting them to discuss issues, that is, evaluating the world and themselves through their carnal desires, their lust, their self-interest, the moment, that which they have in common with one another in the class, in the group. Which allows, according to Bloom, this allows the individual or the student a greater amount of freedom in which to achieve a Weltanschauung. What's that? Well, that's the German word for worldview. Bloom's Weltanschauung, or worldview, as Bloom noted in the footnote, was that of two Marxists, Erich Fromm and Theodore Adorno. Yes, I said Marxists. The Marxist Erich Fromm wrote, "We are proud that in his conduct of life, man has become free from external authorities which tell him what to do and what not to do." That's what God did with Adam in the garden. All that matters is that the opportunity for genuine activity be restored to the individual, that the purpose of society, which is lust, and his own, which is lust, become identical. To give up God and to establish, now remember, Bloom says this is his worldview, and this is what Fromm writes, to give up God and to establish a concept of man as a being who can feel at home in it, that is in the world, if he achieves union with his fellow man and with nature, that is his and the other's carnal nature in the world that stimulates it. Erich Fromm, Escape from Freedom. Then the second book that Benjamin Bloom refers to as his Weltanschauung, the Marxist Theodore Adorno wrote, Authoritarian Personality. And what's that? I'll clarify it. Humbling, denying, dying to, controlling, disciplining, capitulating oneself in order to do the Father's will. That's the quote-unquote authoritarian submission. He writes, was conceived of as a very general attitude that would be evoked in relation to a variety of authority figures. This is all, by the way, used through generalization, not specific. Parents, and here's the category, parents, older people, leaders, supernatural power, and so forth. He continues, God is conceived more directly after a parental image. Now see, God's conceived. He's created from the parent. And this is Marx's thought. There's no heavenly father. Where does it come from in society? It's because the children honor and obey the earthly father. And so it's replicated in a global sense. God, he writes, is conceived more directly after a parental image, and thus as a source of support and as a guiding and sometimes punishing authority. Submission to authority, desire for a strong leader, subservience of the individual to the state. See, that's parental authority or local control or nationalism. And so forth, has so frequently, and it seems to us, correctly been set forth as important aspects of the Nazi creed, that a search for correlates of prejudice had naturally taken these attitudes into account. Family relationships are characterized by fearful subservience of the demands of the parents and by an early suppression of impulses not acceptable to them. The power relationship between the parents, the domination of the subject's family by the father or by the mother, and their relative dominance in specific areas of life also seem of importance for our problem. Theodore Adorno, The Authoritarian Personality. The error in Adorno's logic is that all forms of socialism, including fascism, must negate the father's authority in the home or in the individual, in order to initiate and sustain the socialist control over the individual, that is, over the people. The old education system, or curriculum, is based upon the father's authority system, where the educator, one, preaches established commands and rules to be obeyed as given, teaches established facts and truth to be accepted as is by faith, and discusses with the students any questions they might have regarding the commands, rules, facts, and truth being taught. At the teacher's discretion, that is, providing he or she deems it necessary, has time, the students are able to understand or are not questioning, challenge, defying, disregarding, attacking authority, rewards the students who do right and obey, corrects and or chastens the student who does wrong and or disobeys, that he might learn to humble, deny, die to, control, discipline, capitulate self, in order to do right and not wrong according to the established commands, rules, facts, and truth he's been taught. In other words, he's been told. That is, in order to do the father's will. And four, casts out or expels or grounds any student who questions, challenges, defies, disregards, attacks the father's authority system, which retains the father's authority system in the student's thoughts and actions, resulting in the student knowing, in caps, knowing right from wrong from being told, especially when it comes to behavior. Now, the new education system or curriculum is based upon the feelings and thoughts of the students who are being seduced, deceived, and manipulated. See, the Bible says, through covetousness, they with feigned words make merchandise of you. In other words, finding your lust and offering to help you fulfill it, whoever's doing that is going to use you to satisfy their lusts. You're just human resource, like natural resource. Getting away, you're just discarded, recycled, whatever. Who are being seduced, deceived, and manipulated as Thorndike's chickens, Skinner's rats, Pavlov's dog, by the facilitator of change, the psychotherapist. Which, by the way, when you go here, stimulus response, a predator, a charlatan, a pimp, a pedophile. It's the same pattern. Using the pressure of the group, desire for the group's approval, and fear of its rejection to change the way the students feel, think, and act toward their self, toward others, towards the world, and towards authority. That is, to change their paradigm. Kenneth Benet in Human Relations and Curriculum Change writes, a change in the curriculum is a change in the people concerned, in teachers, in students, in parents. Curriculum change means that the group involved must shift its approval from the old to some new set of reciprocal behavior patterns. People involved who were loyal to the older patterns must be helped to transform their allegiance to the new. Re-education aims to change the system and value, or of values and beliefs of an individual or a group. Barker, Dembo, and Lewin, in Frustration Regression, Experiment with Young Children in Child Behavior and Development, change in methods of leadership is probably the quickest way to bring about a change in the cultural atmosphere of a group. Any real change of the culture of a group is therefore interwoven with the changes of the power constellation within the group. Irvin Yalom, in Theory and Practice in Group Psychotherapy, he writes, there is no more important issue than the interrelationship of the group members. To question the value or activities of the group would be to thrust himself into a state of dissonance. Few individuals, as Ash has shown, can maintain their objectivity. Now, what does that mean? Their loyalty to the father's authority. In the face of apparent group unanimity, Ernst R. Hilgard, in Introduction to Psychology, writes, cognitive dissonance is, quote, the lack of harmony between what one does and what one believes. The pressure to change either one's behavior or one's belief. Kurt Lewin, in Resolving Social Conflicts, selected papers on group dynamics. The group to which an individual belongs is the ground for his perception, his feelings, and his actions. Notice the emphasis on groups. God had to put Moses in the wilderness by himself. The Apostle Paul went off by himself. Jesus went into the wilderness by himself. Because the group is compromise. The Father is none. And God deals with each one of us as an individual, personally accountable. Kurt Lewin in Kenneth Benet, Human Relations and Curriculum Change, writes, it is usually easier to change individuals formed into a group than to change any one of them separately. So you have to persuade separately. You can manipulate fear of loss of, you know, relationship with a group. So that's how you seduce, deceived, and manipulated. The individual accepts a new system of values and beliefs by accepting belongingness to the group, direct correlation. Kurt Lewin in Wilbur Brookover, Sociology of Education, he writes, the child takes on the characteristic behavior of the group in which he is placed. He reflects the behavior patterns which are set by the adult leader of the group. A father up front will have a totally different effect on the students versus, or father's authority system versus a facilitator of change. Jürgen Habermas, who worked out the world court language, Knowledge and Human Interest, Chapter 3, The Idea of Theory of Knowledge as Social Theory. In the dialogic relation of recognizing oneself and the other, they experience the common ground of their existence. In other words, when the students go to dialogue, I feel and I think, lust then comes to the forefront, and they all recognize that they all have that in common, their lust for pleasure and their resentment towards restraint. That's where this is all going. This is the foundation of Bloom's taxonomy. Warren Bennis, in The Temporary Society, he wrote, group members must be able to synthesize individual felt needs with common group felt needs, and that'd be lust. And once that happens, then they're turned against those who remain loyal to the father's authority. Irvin Laszlo set up the climate change scenario in his book, A Strategy for the Future, The Systems Approach to World Order. And this is a major quote. This is the heart of the beast. Bypassing the traditional channels of top-down decision-making, in other words, bypassing the parents. Remember, their parents are not in that class. There's no father's authority in that class. It's all the children's feelings, the affective domain. Bypassing the traditional channels of top-down decision-making, our objective centers upon transforming public opinion into an effective instrument of global politics. Individual values must be measured by their contribution to common interests and ultimately to world interests. In other words, common lust, world lust. Transforming public consensus, feeling of oneness, in other words, into one favorable to the emergence of a stable and humanistic world order. See, I call it worldly peace and humanistic, socialist harmony, yeah. Worldly peace and socialist harmony. Consensus is both a personal and a political step. It is a precondition of all future steps. All the facilitator of change has to do in a positive environment, in an environment which will not judge, condemn, or cast you out for lusting after pleasure or being wrong, is ask you how you feel and what you think regarding the commands, rules, facts, and truth you've been taught that get in the way of your carnal desires, especially when it comes to behavior, and the facilitator of change owns you. This applies to all who participate in the facilitated dialoguing of opinions to a consensus process, establishing lust, the person's carnal desires, his self-interest in the moment that the current situation or object, people, or person is stimulating, over and therefore against the father's authority. That is, over and therefore against what he has been told in the past or is being told in the present that gets in the way. Kenneth Benet in Temporary Society, he writes, any non-family-based collectivity, in other words, when somebody has you dialogue your opinion to a consensus that is non-family-based, that is not father-structured, that intervenes between parent and child. Whoa, what psychology? I feel, I think, it's dialogue. That is a non-family-based collectivity. Is, see, the family is based on discussion, not dialogue. That intervenes between parent and child and attempts to regulate and modify the parent-child relationship will have a democratizing impact on that relationship. For however much a state or community may wish to inculcate obedience and submission in the child, its intervention betrays a lack of confidence in the only object from whom a small child can learn authoritarian submission. Any intervention between parent and child tend to produce familial democracy. In other words, replacing discussion, where dad has a final say, which retains the father's authority, with dialogue, which justifies the child's carnal nature, liberates the child from the parent's authority, from having to do right and no wrong according to the parents, that is, the father's established commands, rules, facts, and truth. Regardless of its intent, the consequence of family democratization take a long time to make themselves felt, but it would be difficult to reverse the process once begun. Once the parent can in any way imagine his own orientation to be a possible liability to the child in the world approaching, once uncertainty is created in the parent how best to prepare the child for the future, the authoritarian family is moribund, regardless of whatever countermeasures may be taken. The state, by its very interference in the life of its citizens, must necessarily undermine a parental authority which it attempts to restore. For however much the state or community may wish to inculcate obedience and submission in the child, its intervention betrays a lack of confidence in the only object from whom a small child can learn authoritarian submission. In other words, leave the parents alone. That's why God at the Tower of Babel told Noah's sons, scatter. You have to depend on me. No, they built a tower. They went with a group. They went with dialogue or rejected discussion. What the Marxists who came to America from Europe in the early 30s did was educate our university professors and their students, along with our leaders in the federal government, including the Supreme Court. James Coleman was trained under Paul Lazarsfeld, who was a member of, he was a Marxist, member of the Frankfurt School. And so education was directly affected by James Coleman's work, his informing of the Supreme Court. Passing laws forcing their agenda down from the top onto the local community through the education system, changing the parents' children, turning them into Marxists, into children of disobedience with the help of the educators using Bloom's taxonomies. Remember, it was Marxists. Bloom's taxonomy is built on the structure of Marxism. So with the help of educators using Bloom's taxonomy, that is Marxist curriculum in the classroom, which excludes the father's authority from education other than to question, challenge, defy, disregard, attack it. Warren Bennis in The Temporary Society, he writes, in order to effect rapid change, one must mount a vigorous attack on the family lest the traditions of present generations be preserved. It is necessary, in other words, artificially, that's that Gruberglade classroom, to create an experiential chasm between parents and children, to insulate the children in order that they might more easily be indoctrinated with new ideas. If one wishes to mold children in order to achieve some future goal, one must begin to view them as superior. One must teach them not to respect their tradition-bound elders who are tied to the past and know only what is irrelevant. Marx built his ideology off of Heraclitus, who said, may the old men of the city go hang themselves and leave the city to the boys. That's the same structure. When it comes to behavior, if you start with dialogue, with how the child feels and what he thinks instead of with discussion, with what the father says, the child is liberated from his father's authority system in making a decision. George Hegel, in System of Ethical Life, he wrote, the child, contrary to appearance, is the absolute, the rationality of the relationship. He is what is enduring and everlasting, the totality which produces itself once again as such. And I add, once he is liberated from the father's authority to become as he was before the father's first command, rule, fact, or truth, came into his life, separating him from himself and the world, now of and for self and the world only. The educator, that is the facilitator of change, that is a group psychotherapist, does not have to tell the students to question, challenge, defy, disregard, attack their parents' authority when they get home from school, if they were not doing that already. Telling them would be old school, maintaining the old world order of being told, even if it was done for the purpose of change. That is, for the purpose of creating a new world order. All they have to do is use a curriculum in which it's classroom, in the classroom, that encourages or pressures the students to participate in dialoguing their opinions to a consensus, justifying their carnal nature, that is lust, over and therefore against their parents' authority, being told to be positive, supportive of the other student's carnal nature, and not negative, judging them by their parents' standards, pressures students to justify their and the other student's love of pleasure and hate of restraint, doing so in order to be approved, that is affirmed by the group, resulting in the group labeling those students who refuse to participate in the process of change or who fight against it as being negative, divisive, hateful, intolerant, maladjusted, unadaptable to change, resistors of change, not team players, lower order thinkers, in denial, phobic, prejudiced, judgmental, racist, fascist, dictators, antisocial, and so forth. That is hurting people's feelings, resulting in the group rejecting them. The student's natural desire for approval and fear of rejection forces him to participate. The same outcome applies to all adults in any profession who participate in the process as well. Once you're labeled, you are labeled for life. In the Soviet Union, once you were labeled psychological, no matter how important you were in the past, your life is over. Your career was done. Irving Yalom writes in his book, Theory and Practice in Group Psychotherapy, only a dead father is a good father. The current generation is the first in the history of the world which has nothing to learn from grandparents. Freud noted that patricide and incest are part of man's deepest nature, either to kill the father and incest. One of the most fascinating aspects of group therapy is that everyone is born again, born together in the group. Bloom, in his taxonomy, wrote, quote, to create effectively a new set of attitudes and values, the individual must undergo great reorganization of his personal beliefs and attitudes, and he must be involved in an environment which in many ways is separated from the previous environment in which he was developed. Many of these changes are produced by association with peers who have less authoritarian points of view, as well as through the impact of a great many courses of study in which the authoritarian pattern is in some way brought into question, while more rational and non-authoritarian behaviors are emphasized. The effectiveness of this new set of environmental conditions is probably related to the extent to which the students are isolated from the home during this period of time. Objectives can best be attained where the individual is separated from earlier environmental conditions and when he is in association with a group of peers who are changing in much the same direction and who thus tend to reinforce each other. That's Book 2, Effective Domain. The role of the therapist, that is the facilitator of change, is to liberate the client or the student from the restraints of the past, from the father's authority system. Carl Rogers, Rogerian psychology, on Becoming a Person, a Therapist's View of Psychotherapy, wrote, prior to therapy, The person is prone to ask himself, what would my parents want me to do? During the process of therapy, the individual comes to ask himself, what does it mean to me? Wilfred Bion of Tavistock, in his book, A Memoir of the Future, interesting title, he writes, prevent someone who knows, and that's in caps, from filling the empty space. In other words, keep the parent from teaching the child right from wrong when they're thinking about what to do. Then Irvin Yalom, let me make sure this is his quote. Yep, Irvin Yalom. This is rather lengthy. Without exception, children, and I add that, he used client. Without exception, children enter group therapy, the group grade classroom, with a history of highly unsatisfactory experience in their first and most important group. Oh, what's that? Their primary family. In other words, the traditional home with parents telling them what they can and cannot do. What better way to help the child recapture the past than to allow him to re-experience and reenact ancient feelings? What are those? Resentment, hostility, toward parents in his current relationship with a therapist. That is the facilitator of change. The facilitator of change is the living personification of all parental images taking the place of the parent. See? Group facilitators refuse to fill the traditional authority role. They do not lead in the ordinary manner. They do not provide answers and solutions. In other words, they don't teach right from wrong from established commands, rules, facts, and truth. They urge the group, the children, to explore and to employ its own resources. In other words, to dialogue their feelings, their desires, and the satisfaction of the moment in the light of the current situation, the desire for the group's approval or affirmation. The group, or the children, must feel free to confront the facilitator of change, who must not only permit, but encourage such confrontation. That's rebellion. That's anarchy. He, the child, reenacts early family scripts in the group, and if therapy, by the way, that's brainwashing. Brainwashing is simply washing respect for and fear of the father's authority from the children's brain, their thoughts. So, and I'll give you quotes on brainwashing for coming up here. If he reenacts early family scripts in the group, and if therapy is successful, is able to experiment with new behavior to break free from the locked family role that's, see, submitting to the parents. He once occupied the patient, the child. It changes the past by reconstructing it, creating a new world order, I add, from his ought. The world it is, parents. And the world of your thought is odd. Well, I ought to be able to go out. A world lusting after the carnal pleasures of the moment that the current situation or people are stimulating. A world void of the father's authority and the guilty conscience which the father's authority engenders for doing wrong, disobeying, sinning, for lusting after pleasure in disobedience. Irvin Yalom writes, unfreezing, this term also adapted from Lewian change theory, refers to the process of disconfirming an individual's former belief system. Kurt Lewin wrote, a successful change includes, therefore, three aspects, unfreezing the present level, moving to the new level, and freezing group life on the new level. Edgar Sheen and Warren Bennis, personal organizational change through group methods, the laboratory approach. They write, in brief, unfreezing is the breaking down of the mores, customs, and traditions of an individual, the old way of doing things, so that he is ready to accept new alternatives. So, you see, this unfreezing is not friendly towards the parents. Brainwashing is simply washing the father's authority system, equated to nationalism, also known as individualism under God, from the person's brain or his thoughts, thus affecting his actions. The following section is from a book explaining how the communist Chinese brainwash their victims through the use of Lewian change theory, which is the same method being used in the group grade facilitated Bloom's taxonomy classroom. Instead of physical torture, using the pain of group rejection to pressure the student into participation. Quote, I mean, if you go back and, you know, replay what Bloom writes about the method in the classroom. Now, this is not Hunter's book on brainwashing. He never explained the procedure. just the effect of it. This is the procedure. The manner in which the prisoner came to be influenced to accept the communist definition of his guilt can best be described by distinguishing two broad phases. Number one, a process of unfreezing, in which the prisoner's physical resistance. See, this child, when he senses the facilitator is his enemy, he can't go up there and throw him out of the room. See, so you physically cannot resist. Social and emotional support. There's nobody in that room that's going to support his old way of thinking. Self-image. See, he's made an image of his parents. Now the image of lust is the image of the group. So his self-image and sense of integrity, see, are all called into question here. And basic values and personality were undermined. See, it's not there. He's coming into a room with no floor. All the traditional way of thinking is not in that room. It's negated. It's removed. Dialogue does not carry the father's authority system. So if we go to dialogue and developing behavior, there is no support for a child raised up in discussion. Therefore, creating a state of readiness to be influenced. In other words, he's in dissonance. He's traumatized. And a process of change in which the prisoner discovered how the adoption of the people's standpoint, in other words, he abdicates the parents for the sake of the approval of the group, and reevaluating himself from this perspective, in other words, what the group thinks, would provide him with a solution to the problems created by the prison pressure. What's the pressure? Rejection by the group. Most are put into a cell or a cell group containing several who are further along in reforming themselves and saw it as their primary duty to help their most backward member to see the group truth about himself in order that the whole cell might advance. Each such cell, see, ever been in these meetings? This is brainwashing. Each such cell had a leader who was in close contact with the authorities for purpose of reporting on the cell's progress and getting advice on how to handle the Western members. The environment undermined the client's self-image. Once this process of self or self-reevaluation began, the client received all kinds of help and support from the cell mates and once again was able to enter into meaningful emotional relationship with others. That from a book, Interpersonal Dynamics, Essay on Reading on Human Interaction by Warren Bennis, Edgar Schein, David Berlow, and Fred Steele. Now to the heart of the matter. We finally got there. For all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. Karl Marx in Critique of Hegel's Philosophy of Right, to enjoy the present reconciles us to the actual. In other words, according to Karl Marx, it is lust, enjoying the carnal pleasures of the moment that the current situation or object, people, or person is stimulating, that makes us at one with the world, establishing lust over and therefore against the Father's authority that gets in the way. Self is therefore actualized in lust. You've heard of self-actualization? It's lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. Not in doing the Father's will. Now, I don't think I added it, but Marx talked about sensuous needs, sense perception, and sense experience. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. He just secularized them. That's all he did. So you can go to college, go to high school, and study those aspects, and you never have any sense that you're actually doing lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. The whole effort was to use language that would not ever bring you, there would be no cognition of God present in the room. That's the power of dialogue, by the way. If we have a room full of dialogue and it's dealing with behavior, God's not present. There's no room. He will just fall through the floor. There's no support for a father's authority in dialogue. You can't say you're wrong. The real nature of man is the totality of social relations, Karl Marx, Feuerbach thesis number 6. Marx in John Lewis, The Life and Teaching of Karl Marx, it is not individualism that fulfills the individual. On the contrary, it destroys him. Society is the necessary framework through which freedom and individuality are made realities. In other words, according to Karl Marx, the child having to humble, deny, die to, control, discipline, capitulate himself in order to do the father's will is not what fulfills the child. See, quote, on the contrary, it is the father's authority The child having to do right and not wrong according to the father's established commands, rules, facts, and truth. That destroys him. That's Marxist. That prevents him from becoming his self, thinking and acting according to his carnal nature, according to what he has in common with all the children of the world. The child's desire for approval from others, requiring him to compromise in order to get along, in order to build a relationship, is the necessary framework through which freedom from the father's authority and freedom to lust after pleasure, to do what he wants without having a guilty conscience, which the father's authority engenders, are made reality. Norman O'Brien, Life Against Death, the psychoanalytical meaning of history. The individual is emancipated in the social group. Freud commented that only through the solidarity of all the participants could the sense of guilt be assuaged. Self-perfection of the human individual is fulfilled in union with the world in pleasure. According to Freud, the ultimate essence of our being is erotic. Eros is fundamentally a desire for union with objects in the world. Eros is the foundation of morality. Look at our culture today. That's where we came from. This is the structure of thought. Psychology. Psychology will always move in the direction of perversity. Always. According to Sigmund Freud, the guilty conscience is a product of the father's authority, which sustains the father's authority in society. It is only in the social group that the guilty conscience can be negated. According to the Marxist Norman Brown, without the social group, the child and society remain subject to the father's authority. Therefore, the child and society can only be liberated from the father's authority and the guilty conscience, which the father's authority engenders, in the social group, which justifies the child's carnal nature, in other words, eros, in other words, lust. Karl Marx, Feuerbach thesis number 4, once the earthly family, and what's the earthly family? Humble yourself to your parents' will. Is discovered to be the secret of the holy family. What's that? The son humbling himself to do the father's will, requiring us to do the same. The former must then itself be destroyed. Why? He didn't recognize the holy family. He just recognized the earthly family. So he had to destroy parental authority. And in theory and practice, in other words, in the children's thoughts and therefore in their actions. Marx writes, the life which he has given to the object sets itself against him as an alien hostile force. According to Karl Marx, Bloom's taxonomies, when children obey their parents, they create an alien and hostile force against their carnal nature. And this is Marx's definition of the dialogue, because we have discussion, what dad says, and we have dialogue, what we want. And so he defines the dialogue. Karl Marx in the Holy Family, he says, not feeling at home in a sinful world. In other words, everybody's a sinner, and yet I'm getting fired because I'm accused of being a sinner. Well, for all sinners, you have no right to fire or kick a child out of the home for being wicked. Everybody's wicked, so that's the norm. You know, tolerant of ambiguity. That's all these terms. Critical criticism, he writes, and that's the dialogue. Remember the heart? Desperately wicked. It's not just wicked, it's desperate. The parent's going to come and take whatever you are enjoying away, and so you become so desperate, you know, anxiety, you're going to attack the parent if he approaches. So critical criticism must set up a sinful world in its own home. That's the dialogue. Critical criticism is a spiritualistic lord. Pure spontaneity. You don't have to work at it. It's actus purus. It's pure. Intolerant of any influence from without. There's no father's authority in dialogue. See, that the difference between the trees that God said you could eat of and the tree you were not to eat of, you would remain under God's authority if you went to discussion, because God has a final say. But when you go to dialogue, fine with the trees you were told to eat. I like this, I don't like that. But when you take that over to what you've been told not to do, you become God. You're in defiance to God. That's what I'm saying. In the church, if you're in a Bible study and somebody asks you how you feel, what do you think about a verse, you just say, excuse me, I'm not God. I don't want to break the first commandment. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. And you're asking me to be a God equal with God, because in dialogue we're equal. I'm not going to do it. I can't do it. God has a final say. I have no authority over God's word. I cannot go, I feel and I think. In interpreting, I can't do that. My opinion doesn't count. The word, you weigh the word with a word. Karl Marx is saying, since sin is common to all, no one has the right to judge, condemn, cast anyone out for sinning, whether it be in the home, in the classroom, in the workplace, in government, even in the church. In fact, since it is a child's natural propensity to resent and even hate restraint, any act against a father's authority system is justified. See, if a minister gets up and he says, well, I'm going to be a facilitator of change, he is an enemy of God. He cannot allow, thus saith the Lord, to control the outcome. It has to be I feel and think. It's all about justifying himself and his lusts. It's the only purpose. Language, how we communicate with each other, which will be covered in greater detail below, comes into play here. When it comes to established right and wrong behavior in dialogue, we set up a sinful world in our own home. In discussion, the father retains his authority. He has the final say. The father's authority remains. Rejecting the heavenly father's authority, claiming it is a result of the earthly father's authority, Karl Marx and those who follow him set out to negate the father's authority so he and all those who follow after him could be liberated not only from the issue of sin, but also from being judged, condemned, cast out for sinning. By negating the father's authority, all could lust after the carnal pleasures of the moment that the world stimulated without having a guilty conscience. It is the guilty conscience which is engendered by the father's authority that sustained the father's authority in the child and in society. The Marxist Norman Brown wrote, the guilty conscience is formed in childhood by the incorporation of the parents and the wish to be the father of oneself. What we call conscience perpetuates inside of us our bondage to past objects, not part of ourself. Dr. Tijanovitz, in his book, The Meaning of Community and Community Policing, which he laid out a communist, the COPS program, is to train the police to be communists. In other words, to use crime to get the parents to put aside their standards for the sake of the community solving the issue. The personal conscience is the key element in ensuring self-control. He gives, by the way, an excellent definition of the conscience. Why would he do that? Because you have to know what it is you want to destroy. You don't want to, you know, miss the mark. The personal conscience is the key element in ensuring self-control, refraining from deviant behavior even when it can be easily perpetrated. The family, the next most important unit affecting social control, is obviously instrumental in the initial formation of the conscience and in the continued reinforcement of the values that encourage law-abiding behavior. You would think you would encourage that. Now, Tijanovitz then promotes bringing the police and the community together with the dialoguing of opinions to a consensus progress process, negating local control, that is, the father's authority system, done with the use of crime to bring the people together. They're going to use crime. There is no father's authority, that is, judgment, condemnation, being cast out, in dialogue. Therefore, using dialogue to establish right and wrong behavior negates not only the father's authority, it negates the guilty conscience as well. Kurt Lewin wrote, the negative violence of a forbidden object, which in itself attracts a child, that is the guilty conscience, thus usually derives from an induced field of force of an adult. Authority means you author a command and you enforce it. Those two things, author, enforce. If this field of force loses psychological existence for the child, and he explains, if the adult goes away or loses authority, when we have a, let's be positive, not negative, the positive is you remove chastening, remove judgment, you remove condemnation, or, you know, the fear of judgment from the room. And he says, if you can do that, if you go positive and not negative, the negative violence also disappears. The conscience is gone. The conscience is directly tied to the fear of being judged, condemned, and cast out. That's important. See, you're not going to have contrition and repentance without the fear of judgment. While the guilty conscience ties the child to the father, or rather the father to the child, the superego ties the child to society. Bloom's taxonomy has built the students' moral standards, their classroom experience, upon the superego. Bloom writes, superego development is conceived as the incorporation of the moral standards of society. Well, what do you have to do for the group? Compromise. Not for the father, but for the group. You have to be tolerant of ambiguity, tolerant of sin, tolerant of lust. Therefore, the levels of the taxonomy should describe successive levels of goal setting appropriate to superego development. How much has this person learned to compromise in changing environments? It was not only Karl Marx who set out to negate the father's authority system. Sigmund Freud had the same agenda. Herbert Marcuse, a Marxist who wrote about the use of psychology to advance the cause of Marxism, wrote, "The hatred against patriarchal suppression," and I've covered this in other issues, "a barrier to incest, the desire for the sons to return to the mother culminates in the rebellion of the exiled sons, the collective killing and devouring of the father." Well, what happened? The father sees incestual behavior, children having sex with one another and with a mother. And he kicks them out. "Not in my home." Well, they come together, come to consensus, they come back. They don't only kill him, they devour him. Why would you kill? Why would you devour him? Well, what does that mean? Are they cannibals? Well, he just doesn't exist anymore. See, if you kill him, then there's a tomb. And the next generation goes, "Well, who that's?" "Well, that's dad. What happened to him? We killed him." Why? Because he kept telling us what we could or couldn't do. Now we have a guilty conscience coming back because the children know right from wrong. But if you cremate him and sprinkle his ashes all over him, you don't leave any reference to him. Now, if you devour him and see dialogue, there's no father's authority. So if we establish right and wrong behavior through dialogue, the outcome is fatherless, doesn't exist. Has no value. It's not relevant to any decision from there on. So if you take the husband, wife, and the children, and you focus on the family, that's relationship, and you don't focus on the father, you focus on the family, which requires dialogue, you just neutered the dad. Oh, boy, here, that's where we are. This is what's happened. Oh, we're going to solve this family problem. No, not to focus on the family. No, you focus on the father. Dad can be wrong. But you end up with a right-wrong. My dad's wrong. Now that right-wrong structure is still there. But if you go to dialogue for the sake of relationship with the family, you just neutered. You just got rid of right-wrong. Now it's I feel and I think. And so it's not really a decisive matter whether one has killed one's father, abstained from the deed, if the function of the conflict and its consequences are the same. In other words, if we can move the father away and the family away from discussion, dad has a final say, to dialogue, we can all come together on the same feelings and thoughts of the moment. Dad's neuter. He's gone. There's no longer a father's authority structure, which Karl Marx and Freud hated. And Bloom's taxonomy destroys. Totally destroys. You cannot maintain. In fact, he said there are many stories of the conflict and tension that these new practices are producing between parents and children. You cannot maintain your family structure with a father in authority in the home with your children under the teaching of Bloom's taxonomy. It's impossible. Sigmund Freud's history of the prodigal son is not of the son coming to his senses, humbling himself, returning home, submitting himself to the father's authority, learning his inheritance was not his father's money, but his father's love for him. That's Luke 15:11-24. But, this is Freud, of the son joining with his friends, returning home, killing the father, taking all that was his, the father's, using it to satisfy their carnal desires, their lusts, killing all the fathers in the land. In other words, anybody who's negative in the group's going to annihilate. Devouring the father so all the children could be the same, like them, thereby affirming them, their incest, justifying and supporting their control over them. Abraham Maslow explained the significance of merging Marxism, psychology, and advancing Marxism in the classroom and around the world. Quote, Marxian theory needs Freudian type instinct theory. Other society needs the individual's lust to round it out. And, of course, vice versa. Lust needs community support or the group support. Third force psychology is also epi-Marxian in these senses. That is, including the most basic scheme of true good social conditions are necessary for personal growth. In other words, lust is necessary. Being positive is necessary. Bad social conditions stunt human nature. In other words, the father's authority stunts the child from becoming himself as the world. This is to say, one could reinterpret Marx into a self-actualizing, fostering third and fourth force psychology philosophy. And my impression is, anyway, that is the direction in which they are going now. That was back in the 1950s. In other words, society needs man's natural inclination to lust after pleasure in order to become one, and man's natural inclination to lust after pleasure needs society. That is the group's justification. The liberation of self, of lust out from under the Father's authority is necessary for personal growth, while submission of self to the Father's authority stunts human nature. Marxism is philosophy and psychology becoming at one with one another. It is the dialogue which does not recognize the Father's authority that all can become one, bypassing the Father's authority, the issue of sin in making rules, policies, and law in establishing right and wrong behavior, resulting in lust being right and the Father's authority being wrong. This is the ideology of the contemporary classroom. Karl Marx, Feuerbach's thesis number 11, scribed on his tomb. So it must be important. The philosophers have only interpreted the world in different ways. The objective, however, has changed. In other words, according to Karl Marx and Sigmund Freud, it is a father's authority system. The father's established commands, rules, facts, and truth, which differ from father to father, that divides the children, the people. This correlates to nations as well. See, it's that each nation having its standards then causes division. It is in the child's propensity to respond or change in accordance to the situation or object, people, or person in the moment that is therefore the objective of life. This is the UN. Get them together, get them dialoguing, diverse group dialoguing and consensus over social issues in a facilitated meeting, which is a Soviet, and the outcome will never produce a father's outcome. See, that was the UN. That's what's permeated our whole culture. We thought, well, the Berlin Wall, you know, it came down, communism was defeated. No, it succeeded. Because traditional hardline communists just tell you how to be a Marxist. These guys said, well, don't study Marx, be Marx. And so therefore the dialoguing of opinions to a consensus is everywhere around now. So the wall didn't come down because communism was defeated. They didn't need the wall because it had succeeded. Without the help of the facilitator of change, the children remain subject to the father's authority system, passing it on to the next generation. This cycle, according to the Marxists, had to be overcome. George Lukács, History of Class Consciousness, What is Orthodox Marxism, wrote, "The dialectic method was overthrown. The parts, the children, were prevented from finding their definition, their identity within the whole, that is, within the group." As long as you have a traditional classroom, a teacher up front, teaching and preaching and discussing according to the father's system, this process won't work. You had to replace that traditional teacher with a facilitator. It is a facilitator of change's agenda to replace, take the place of the father's authority system in the classroom. The facilitator of change, perceiving himself as being a personification of the students who, like him, lust after the carnal pleasure of the moment that the world stimulates, hating restraint, sees it as his duty to justify the students' natural inclination to lust after pleasure in order to justify his natural inclination to lust after pleasure. When you question the facilitator of change's action, he will respond with, "It's not just about you." Really meaning, and this, now he won't say this, but this is what he's, this is the current. This is the very purpose of his identity, why he's there. He has no other purpose. It is all about me. So I can lust after pleasure without having a guilty conscience. With your affirmation, if you refuse to affirm me, my lust, or get in my way, the people will remove, negate you. Since having justified their lust, I now own them. See, the facilitator opening up this Pandora's box, this lust, gets approval of the group, then anybody, because he's got group pressure now, anybody who comes in and wants to discuss, anybody with discussion structure of language, in this dialogue of opinions to consensus environment, will be martyred. They'll be converted first if they participate. Or they will be silenced. You know, they'll be silent for instance. Well, I'll just sit back and let this go and maybe I'll find some place where I can bring them back around again. Silenced first, then censored if they start confronting, and then removed. It appears, this the facilitator saying says, "It appears I must keep an eye on you from now on for my good." See, this is the true meaning of site-based management. What they see, they own. Language comes into play here as the father's authority requires discussion. See, where he has the final say. If there are any questions regarding his commands, rules, facts, and truth, with him having the final say, because I said so, it is written. Whereas in dialogue, all are equal. There is no father's authority. You are wrong in dialogue. There is only the person's desires and satisfactions of the moment, opinion, which being expressed and justified. So you can tell somebody in this process, well, you're wrong. They'll just say, well, that's your opinion. No, you're wrong. Well, that's your opinion. No, you're wrong. That's your opinion. Well, no, you're wrong. No, that's your opinion. Forever. Yeah, they can't admit that they're wrong or they'll come back over to traditional way of thinking. That's a father's structure, right, wrong. Bohm and Pete in Science, Order, and Creativity, they write, in an ordinary discussion, people usually hold relatively fixed positions and argue in favor of their views as they try to convince others to change. Now, this is written by a socialist, so there's some derogative notation in here, but it is a recognition that there's a position. If in a classroom I ask your child to defend their position, they can't. It's the shield of faith. Your shield protects you. Your parents' protection protects the child. But if I ask the child to defend his position and he goes to I feel and I think, I got him. See, I got him. I found, just like the devil found that she wanted to touch the tree. He used neurolinguistics. Yea, hath God said, thou shalt not touch every, you know, shall not eat of every tree in the garden. And that's an embedded statement in a question, and elicits you, it brings your feelings, your lusts up to the front. It allows you to circumvent the restraint. And so she actually shares in her response her carnal nature, nor touch. See, that this is all nothing new under the sun. This is used today. And the key was to get the dialogue, because the dialogue was, I feel. Well, I feel like touching. What do you think? Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But discussion won't take you there, because discussion is, it is written, it is written. Dad says. That's what Jesus did in the temptations. Totally opposite of what the woman and Adam did. No, a woman did in the garden. Adam just abdicated. And Hebrews 12, 5 through 11, I'll read it. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then you're bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we've had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we now not much more be in subjection unto the Father's spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might partake of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. What does that mean? What you have grieving is you have no control. When somebody dies, you have no control. You grieve. It's grievous for a season. Nevertheless, afterwards, it yields a peaceful fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. In other words, God has the final say. Now you have peace. So you're not tossed to and fro in turmoil and gripe and murmuring, whatever. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Ephesians 6:1-3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. Proverbs 4:1 and 15:32. Hear ye, children, the instruction of the father, and attain to no understanding. He that refuses instruction despises his own soul, but he that heareth reproof getteth understanding. The rejection of the father's authority is accomplished by making dialogue the child or man's means to knowing right from wrong behavior, making behavior subject to the child, carnal nature, subjective. Bloom's taxonomy begins not with knowledge being based upon the father's commands, rules, facts, and truth, not with what the father has told the child, what is right and what is wrong behavior, with, now this, I'm following the sequence, knowing, comprehending, and so forth. Application and analysis. So with comprehension being, now this is a traditional, dad says, then comprehension being what will happen to me if I disobey. But Bloom starts knowing is based upon the child's sense experience of the past as well as the present. In other words, he had lust of pleasure and resentment towards restraint in the past, and he still has that current in the whatever issue they're covering in the classroom. Used to evaluate the current situation in the present, leaving the father's authority out other than to be an obstacle to overcome. Not only in the classroom, but in his evaluation of the world events, local, national, and global as well. Reasoning is then made subject to the child's and the group's self-interest rather than subject to what the father said or demanded. A dialogue, Bohm writes, is essentially a conversation between equals. If you go, I feel and I think to the Word of God, you have become equal with God. See, it's called a heresiarchal paradigm. You understand why? It's heresy. The spirit of dialogue, now there's place for dialogue, but when you've been told you can't do something and you take dialogue there, you're in defiance to whatever you've been told and whoever told you. The spirit of dialogue is, in short, the ability to hold many points of view in suspension. In other words, your belief in God has to be put out of there on a cross. You know, hang him on a cross for a while. We'll get back to you. Hopefully you don't die before we get back to you. Along with a primary interest in the creation of common meaning. In other words, that what do we have in common? Lust of flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. As it was in the Garden of Eden, it is today via the use of Bloom's taxonomy in the classroom. Dialogue is being used to establish right and wrong behavior instead of the father's established commands, rules, facts, and truth. In order to liberate the child from the father's authority system, so they can do wrong, disobey, sin, lust after the carnal pleasure of the moment that the world stimulates, without having a guilty conscience, without being judged, condemned, and cast out. In other words, with the group's approval. And it's the facilitator that we're talking about. It's the teacher who is trained in Bloom's taxonomy. It's all about them being able to sin without being judged, condemned, cast out, and without them having a guilty conscience. You think it's the students? The students are corrupted. They are sacrificed for the sake of the facilitator. Norman Brown in Life Against Death, he says, to experience Freud. This is by a Marxist who studied Freud. He said, to experience Freud is to partake a second time of the forbidden fruit. Herbert Marcuse in Eros and Civilization, we get the phrase, if it feels good, just do it, from his work. He writes, the original sin must be committed again. We must again eat from the tree of knowledge in order to fall back into the state of innocence. John 3:19, and this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. James 1:17, for every good and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Luke 11:35. Take heed therefore that the light which is in thee be not darkness. It's called enlightenment. Isaiah 5:20. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil. In other words, lust good, the father's authority evil. That put darkness for light and light for darkness. That put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Psalms 36:1-4, the transgression of the wicked saith within my heart that there is no fear of God before his eyes. For he flattereth himself in his own eye, that's self-esteem, until his iniquity be found to be hateful. The words of his mouth are iniquity and deceit. He is left off to be wise and to do good. He deviseth mischief upon his bed. He setteth himself in a way that is not good. He abhorreth not evil. Psalms 10:3-4. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire and blesses the covetous, whom the Lord abhorreth. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. 1 Timothy 3:2-5. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such turn away. And finally, 2 Timothy 4:3-4. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. But after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears. In other words, always wanting to hear something new. iPad mentality. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. And He's the one who will direct your paths. Proverbs 3:5-6.